So, here we are in London with number 11. That's a good number.
Yep.
Number 11. What sort of things are important to us? What sort of things are creating our values in life? We went for a walk around the property here yesterday, and as we walked around the property, there was a sign that said, "This series of buildings has been used in these many ways over the years." And as it told it, it told the history of the building, it told the history of how the buildings were used, and how it was a school, and how it was a hospital, and in many other things that it was. And then it started to give the tragic history of the buildings and the various problems that they had entertained. And I thought to myself, is it going to help people to know about how wonderful this building is, to know about the little problems that it entertained in the past? And you say, well, the tragic thing was not a little problem. Well, that's past. That's past. How many years ago was it? 100 years ago? And you're still listening to it as though it's today? Do you know that not one person in this building realizes any of the history? All they do is think of the current day activity. They're only thinking of, they're going home. They're going to their apartment. They're going to their monastery, you know, monk. They're going to their cell. They're going to the peace of where they're going. Everybody in this building, and its auxiliary buildings, are coming here to live in the now. They're not coming here to live in the yesterday or in the future. They're coming to live in the now. They're thinking, I'm going to make my supper, I'm going to prepare my apartment, I'm going to take care of a friend, or I'm going to, you know, my husband or wife is there, my children may be there, I don't know, maybe don't have children in the apartment here. But the thing is, what is it? They're living in the now. Do they think of yesterday? Do they think of tomorrow? Not really. And what is another thing that they do almost immediately? Is they turn on the television. And the television transports them out of their private little apartment, the wonderful, peaceful apartment where they have security and they have a feeling of goodness and refinery. And then they flight around the world on television. And then if that isn't enough, then they get the videos and take themselves to all of these wonderful adventures of Storyland that the videos are about. And when it's time to go to bed, they have been living about 7 or 8 different lives between the time they come home from work and the time that they get ready for bed. And when they climb in bed, they have all sorts of, not sugar plum fairies dancing in their head, they have all sorts of problems dancing. They have the memory of things that are going on around the world. They have the thought of the problems of the world, the thought of the world itself. And then they tune in me. And they say, okay, Herb, I'm going to listen to you tonight. And so Herb comes on, and Herb says, good evening, good evening, good evening. This is Mr. Candle speaking. It's time for bed now. Time to put aside all of the ideas and all the problems of the world and just be at peace. Just be at peace. Listen to the quietness of your heart. Now you're getting ready to go to bed. So you're sitting in your chair in front of your television, and you don't turn the television off the last minute. You turn the television off whenever you turn it off. Then you continue to sit there, and you say to yourself, I'm living in the now. I am peace. I am peace. I am peace. And you keep saying, I am peace, for quite a while, because you're sort of telling your consciousness, you're telling your body, you're telling your nerves, you're telling all of the aspects of your area functions of your body to relax, your tummy to relax. You don't need another cup of coffee. You don't need to have anything to drink. You've had plenty during the day. Now, you're just going to relax and let your body be at complete peace. And you say, I am peace. I am peace. I am peace. And you sit back and just sort of snuggle into your chair, and you say, I am peace. And you stretch out your legs and say, I am peace. Oh, I feel so good. I feel so relaxed. I feel so peaceful. And as you have this feeling, you say to yourself, all is in divine order in the world. All is in divine order in the world. Now, the stories that you've been watching on television do not flash through your mind when you say, all is in divine order. What happens is, when you say, all is in divine order, contrary to what you've been watching on television, you feel peace. And you say, yes. Yes. I give my peace unto my world. I see all of the places where people are confused and where people are not at peace, I see them now at peace. I see peace everywhere. I see peace throughout the world. I see peace in my family. I see my sons and my daughters, my wife or my husband, I see my beloveds, you know, all peace. I breathe deep and let it all out and I say, all is peace. All is peace. Oh, and I'm yawning. And I'm so relaxed and so peaceful. And then a thought comes into my mind about some person that I care about, and they're having a problem. And they're having perhaps an illness. And I'm aware that they have an illness. It just comes into my consciousness because I've been stirring up all that stuff. And I see them in my mind's eye. And I say, you're whole and perfect. You're whole and perfect. And I just say that and say that and say that. And we all are one in this universal cosmos, in this universal universe where there is no separation. We're all one. We're one, if not by the physical fact that we're one, but we're one because of the mental fact, the spiritual fact, and all these other things. We're one. Now, when I think a thought about my beloved, my friend, who is ill, and I say, you're whole and perfect right now, I am not sending them my vibrations, I'm not sending them my love, I'm not sending them anything that is physical or mental or emotional. I am balancing the energy in me about them so that when I think about them, I think balance. And because we are one, they are balanced because my thought is balance. I am the creator of my world. I'm the creator of my thought. My thought in my world is all balance and harmony. My thought in my world is wholeness and perfection for myself. My thought for myself is that I am living in a healthy body, a healthy mind, a healthy spirit, a healthy world. Everything is great in my world. And there's my friend that's having this problem. And I don't want that. I don't want anybody in my world, anybody in my awareness to be having a problem. So, I set to write my thought about them, which is my vibration about them, which is my energy about them, that it is a peaceful energy, a peaceful thought, a peaceful oneness. So, our universal oneness, because we are all one, my universal oneness, that's what it is. And I don't like to say this word, but no negative thoughts can come in. And I change it. I say, only positive thoughts come in.
Yes.
Only positive thoughts come in my world about me or my world. Now, we were having dinner with Ibu Bey last night. And that's an adventure, you know that.
Mm.
And so as we were having this dinner with Ibu Bey, he was a live wire. He was here and there and everywhere, and he was entertaining everybody in the restaurant, and I don't know that was their desire, but I apologized to several people at several tables afterwards. I said, I hope we weren't too noisy or too out of line with our youngster there. Oh, he made us feel so good. Our kids were not really as bad as we thought they were. No, they were very kind. And I said, he is a live wire. He is a dynamic fellow. Yes, I can see that. Hey, our kids are too. Yeah, but we push them down. We should let them be a little more free. And I said, no. With guidance and with the wisdom and with discipline, teaching them to self-discipline themselves, the happiest thing in the world. as I said, we were sitting in the restaurant and before, and Abel Bay was with us, and he's 5 years old, full of spit and vinegar, and he had his Mr. Tigger, and he had his Mickey Mouse with him, and he was bouncing them around, and the other little children were sitting perfectly in their stools. They were sitting there watching him, and they were, their mothers were, and fathers were very proud of them because they were sitting so quietly, but they weren't being gentle. Then Ibu Bey started his game, and he was like a catalyst to those kids. And those kids started squirming on their benches, and they started twisting around, and they started looking around, and they started doing things. Then they started rearranging the benches they were sitting on so that they would, you know, have something to do. They had energy that needed to go and fly. But they watched Ibu Bey, and they would make sounds to Ibu Bey. And Ibu Bey didn't pay any attention to him. He just took his Tony the Tiger and Mickey Mouse, and he just played with them, and he would push it toward them a little bit, you know, and say, dup, 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 you know, and they all fell in love with him. Now, was Ibu Bey poorly disciplined as he was doing all these things, or were the other children overly disciplined, or where's whatever? All we are concerned about is that we put the cause in motion that Ibu Bey is a balanced boy. Yeah? And that he's a balanced boy. How do we determine or define balance? That has to be something to think about. We determine and define balance by how it reflects on what is a harmonious and a happy circumstance. In the restaurant last night, Ibu Bey made perhaps 10, 20 children, at least 20 children, happy. He gave them an outlet vicariously through him and his spontaneity. And to their parents, they were thinking, gee, I should really let my kid express a little more. I should let my kid out of the cage, out of the box, you know. And so they learned a lesson watching Ibu Bey. And he's a leader. He's a director of the theater at which he plays. And everything he did was fine. And then he put on a little pouting act because he didn't get what he wanted. And he faced into his chair. And Auntie right away wants to be concerned, and she goes sitting next to him. Says, is there something I can do for you? And I said, don't let him pull your leg. Yeah. And finally, she went back. And after he realized he wasn't going to get attention that way, he turned around and he started being an ordinary, fun, fantastic boy. We let the world rule us because we have a false idea that we have to love it in our human way. And we rather should be loving these things with our divine way. Did I see Ibu Bey as a naughty boy last night? Hardly. I saw him as a dynamic, magical child, just setting the entire restaurant on fire with enthusiasm and joy, and that everybody in that restaurant looked at him and thought, wow, what a great kid, you know? And his mother was sitting there, so proper at the table, on the opposite side of him, where she wouldn't have to take care of him, which is sorry. And Christy was over there on the other side, away from him too. And it was just wonderful. He was just wonderful. Now, we have trouble, as we're living our life, in trying to be proper, and trying to do things that society thinks that we should do. And when we do that, we get into all sorts of trouble. Now, society says you shouldn't go out and be too open with people. They're liable to step on you. Well, I don't know that. I just go out and I talk to everybody. I go out and I say things to people that it's a sort of a humorous thing, and it doesn't turn out that way. They don't even laugh. And I think to myself, I guess I didn't get across to them. Well, that's okay. That's okay. I said it, and I'm happy. And so then I said to somebody else, I said it, and I'm happy. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful because I'm free. I'm free to be me. I'm free to think my thoughts and live my life and do things that delight me and make me feel just like it's wonderful. Now, I'm 25 years old, and of course, being a young man as I am, I can make a few mistakes. People won't pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. And the older I get, people expect me to be more mature and more, you know, proper and more dignified. And as they look at me, they see me less mature and less dignified and more of a happy, harmonious guy. Now, why? Because I look at the world as a world of peace, as a world of love, as a world where everybody wants to enjoy themselves and be all that they can be. Now, if we're going to go around looking at other people's problems and worrying about it, we're not going to be all that we can be. If we're going to try to put the world right by going out and doing Greenpeace and doing all these other things, which are beautiful things, you know, but there's not enough hours in the day to do the job that needs to be done. If we were to look at the world condition today, and we were just to say, I'm going to count all the problems in the world today, and I'm going to do what I can to help. Now there's 1, 2, 3 million, 4, 5, 6 billion. The problems are exponential. They just grow and grow and grow. Now, there's no way that I could ever begin to be meaningful to the problems of the world. And here, this, the Kellogg's, here, they say, adopt a monkey. You know, yeah. I mean, now, yeah. What about adopting children?
That's what I said.
And what about adopting families that, that need to be a little loved? And what about, you know, the bigger thing, what about saving the whales, you know? I mean, I don't mean that in as bad as it sounds, but this is just one of the zillion possibilities of being worried about what's going on in the world. Now, when we, instead of being worried about what's going on in the world, begin to say, all is peace. We are taking this continuum of energy, this continuum of all the oneness that exists throughout the entire universe, and we are being the balancing point in it when we say, I am peace. I am peace. You feel the goosebumps all over you when you do that. I am peace. I am peace. I am one. Now, I love monkeys. I think they're wonderful. I love little children. I think they're wonderful. I love older children. I love adults. I love everybody. I love me. And so I take that love, that unconditional love that I have, and I think it toward all in the world. I don't think the world needs my help. I don't think that the monkeys need my help, or children need my help, or anybody needs my help anywhere. Now you say, well, that's not very nice. Well, they don't. They don't need my help to make their life better. They have chosen whatever they have chosen. But now, I choose to bring balance into the thinking of the world by putting balance in my own thought. And as I put balance in my own thought, all the world is balanced. Jesus said, if I be lifted up, all the world is lifted up unto me. If I be lifted up, all the world is lifted up unto me. I mean, that's what the Christ said, you know, and that's pretty cool. Now, are we practicing that? No. We aren't lifted up. We are pushing ourselves down. We say, oh, it's too bad we have all these bills and that the money market's doing what it's doing. And you, I mean, you name it, and you can find it someplace. Well, let's name the truth, and let's find it every place. And the truth is that all is in divine order now. All is peace now. All is harmony throughout the universe right now. If you take a note and you have a person singing a particular note, or you strike a note on an instrument, and that note is so pure that it breaks the glass, you know, you think to yourself, wow, how about that? Okay, if that could happen, why couldn't it happen that we could think peace and have it be so pure that it just sort of clarifies the entire universe? It clarifies the entire quantum aspect of our thinking in its broadest scope. It's fantastic. Can we do that? Oh, we can. We do it. We do it in our own unfortunate thinking, where we're not thinking. We think, oh, that's too bad, they got a problem, that's too bad, the world is going through this difficulty. That's not the right type of thinking. That's the kind of thinking that goes nowhere. It just drags everything down with it. We want to lift everything up. We want to lift up this world, lift up our universe, lift up everything by our thought. And it's not really a matter of lifting it up. Jesus said, if I be lifted up, all the world be lifted up unto me. What he meant was, as I maintain my awareness of my divinity, all my world is aware of its divinity. As I maintain my awareness of my divinity, all the world is aware of its divinity. It's not a matter that he personally goes out and says, hey, be aware of your divinity. You know, come on, wake up, be aware of your divinity. He says, if I am aware of my divinity, if I be lifted up, all the world is lifted up unto me, wherever my consciousness is. And if your consciousness is in the pure peace, the beauty, the goodness, the wholeness, the rightness, and the fantastic qualities that life is, then the world is that way. You know yourself. If you go by a red Volkswagen, you see red Volkswagens all over on the road, but you never saw them before. You never saw them before because they were not in your consciousness. And so it is. when you go around, you buy a car, and pretty soon you say, my goodness, everybody's got my car. They got good taste, you know. And you didn't realize that because you hadn't thought about it. If you have an old car, you don't think about it because your car has lost its personality. It has lost its uniqueness. It's lost its special quality, its new car quality, you know. But this is so magnificent. But it's a truism. And we can use it in our life. We can use it in our world to do what? We can use it in our world to establish the world in keeping with, if I be lifted up, all the world is lifted up unto me. If I be lifted up in my consciousness by my choice in peace, harmony, love, beauty, goodness, then everybody is likewise lifted up. It's great. It's really great. We were thinking a while back, it'd be nice to own the square property that was around our property, and it stuck out into the BLM land, so on three sides it was just public land, and nobody goes there because it's just mountains and stuff. And so if we had this whole little peninsula, it'd be nice. Well, we had part of the peninsula, but on the right side there were two properties that we didn't have. And so I said to Ellen, well, let's buy them. And she said, well, they're not for sale. I said, yeah, I know. That's the right time. They'll be for sale. So we bought them. But we were going to have to take a chunk of money out of our fund to buy it, to pay for it, because we always pay cash. We never buy in time. And so we were buying it. And then the local newspaper ran a story on our monastery. And was telling all of San Diego about us and everything. And some of it was good, some of it was nonsense. But one woman called, and she says, what kind of monastery do you have there? And so we told her, and she says, I'd like to see that. And I said, well, come on up. She said, well, I'm 89 years old, or 80-something years old. And she says, I drive, but I don't like to drive that far. That's 70 miles. I drive around town, you know, just in what I know. Okay, well, next time someone's in town, we'll have them pick you up and bring you up, and you can stay overnight and enjoy our thing. Because, I mean, she was really interested. So we picked her up a couple days later, brought her up to the mountain. And she looked around. This is nice. I walk on this property, I feel peace, I feel such a feeling of one, you got something going here, you got something really nice going. We think so. We think so too. And so she stayed overnight and enjoyed our meal with us and enjoyed our talks that I give for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and so forth. And then she says, I have a church that I'm not using. You know, it's an incorporated church and I incorporated with a friend. I had been active with him, and he died in a fire. And I tried to pull him out of the fire, and I was in my 70s at the time. I tried to pull him out of the fire, and I got burned all over my body. And so she had to have a complete recovering of the body, you know. And she looked great, though. She looked great, in good condition. And so she said, well, this church now, I have no desire or need for it, and it's totally legal and everything. Would you like? Sure. So she gave it to us. She brought the papers along. And then she said, well, now here's my checkbook, too. And I said, fine. And so a couple $100 we thought would be in there. Well, we opened the checkbook, and here was $257,000.
Okay.
How about that? And so we said to her, oh, that's just the amount of money we wanted to pay for this property to belong to the church, you know, to pay for this property to close up our borders here. And she says, well, I want you to take this money and buy that. And I said, we're not going to do that. We're going to take your money, and we're going to hold on to it for a year and not do one thing with it, because if you change your mind, we want to be able to give it back to you. Because, you know, she might make a crazy thing like that. So we're not going to take advantage of her. So she said, I will insist that you buy that property, and if you feel that any time that I should have it back, give me the property. And we said, okay, that's all right. You know, that's a decision that she has. So we bought the property. And it was just the amount of money that we needed for it. And we got it. But you see, we didn't know that these things were going to happen. We merely live and teach and enjoy who we are and what we are. We enjoy the philosophy of abundance, the philosophy of right action, of peace and health. And she lives with us for many, many years. I don't mean that. She lived as a member of the organization for many years, and she lived in town. And she was just a very dear friend, and she became a student, even taking the courses and doing beautiful. And in her 90s, she passed along. But she was doing her thing. And how could we have had the slightest idea that this newspaper article, which was in one of the yellow journalism newspapers, you know, was going to be an advantage to us when they were trying to put us down? And here she came out of that. How lovely. You don't know. You don't. When you give totally of yourself, when you live totally of yourself, you set into the cosmos the most beautiful vibrations of peace and harmony and goodness, and all the world responds to it in some fantastic way, in some glorious way, and that's the way to have it be. If you ever are worried that you don't have enough money, you won't. If you're ever worried that your health is bad, it'll be bad. If you're ever worried that life is not giving you all of the joy that it can, it won't. Because you don't know how to receive it. You don't know how to just accept it and say thank you. And live in that abundance, live in that feeling of magnificence. Now, we were talking, and I talk about this often on this particular topic. When you're dealing with little children, you say to them, oh, you are so wonderful. You clean your room so nicely. You put your clothes away so nicely. And they're not. But you say, you're cleaning your room so nicely. You put your clothes away so nicely. You're doing everything. You're planting seeds. That child is a garden. And you're planting seeds in that garden, and seeds of goodness, seeds of balance, seeds of harmony, seeds of self-discipline. And those are a very important thing. And, of course, it's for you, too. So, as you plant these things in the seeds in the child, results come. Now, is that only where it takes place? Or is it in the rest of the world too? Is it in the rest of the world where we plant seeds about our spouse, about our children, about our families, about our parents, about our jobs, about everything in our world? Someone comes to you and says, I don't feel very well. And you say, I see you whole and perfect. I see every organ action of your body whole. You're stupid. I'm sick. Don't you understand? I'm not feeling good. I got to go to the doctor. Okay, go ahead. But I will not change my vision of you as being whole and perfect. I will not change my thought of you just because you want to be something different. In my world are people only that are whole and perfect, that are wonderful, that are fabulous in every possible way. They're learning that awareness. They're coming into that. But they do it. You know, my own staff, on campus, if they have a troublesome thing going on in their life, in their body or anything else, they come to me and they say, you know, will you lay your hand on me and stuff. Mm. I said, no. I said, I could do it, but no. I am teaching you how to do it for yourself.
That's it.
And I want you to be able to do it for yourself when I'm not around. And I want you to be able to not need to do it because you have the right attitude of mind. But come on, help me. Hey, look, here is what your problem is. You have anger against this person. You have uptightness against this, and it's boiling like a fester inside of you and making you sick and making you unhappy. Now, I'm telling you that. Now, if you want to believe it, okay. Oh, I do not. I love them. Don't protest. The woman doth protest to you, but don't protest to me. If I tell you something, great. Now, you want me to lay my hand on you. What difference is the laying my hand on you and telling you where I feel that you're problem is? Now, so then they go back and they carry their self-righteous anger with them, you know, and I say to them, okay, whatever you want. And not more than an hour or so later, they come back and they say, well, I've got some things I want to talk to you about. I said, great. Not once mentioning that problem that they brought in a few minutes before, because it was gone. The seed was planted. They objected, but finally the objection was overruled by the seed being recognized for the dirty little seed it was, the seed of being angry at somebody else. And so they come back and they forget to mention it. It's like a little child who falls down and scrapes his knee, and the mother said, throws a kiss to it and said, whoa, all good and well, go play. And the kid runs out and play. Hey, you're going to get bacteria in there. You're going to get all these terrible things in there. No way. That child is as healthy as a fox, you know. And he comes back playing, and hey, the blood is all scabbed over and everything. So he goes in, take a shower, and it gets rinsed away. It looks terrible, you know. You know, blood things look terrible. You get a bloody nose, and you think, my God, you're dying. You know, and it's nothing. And most of those things are nothing. But in truth, we probably should wash these things off. We should do a little care. But the more attention we give to the problem, the more we make that problem into a giant experience of negativity for us. It's hard because this is not what medical school teaches. It's not what anything else teaches. But I think if we were to listen to Hippocrates, we would come to a conclusion that we might readily put into our life. He said, never give a potion to a patient that you couldn't take yourself. And also, he said this very arcane and interesting comment. He said, never kill a patient. Never kill a patient. Now, why would he say never kill a patient? I mean, when he had such primitive medicine available to him, you know, why would he say never? Well, what he meant was, if you say to the patient that they're sick and they're going to die and that there's no chance they're going to live, you are killing the patient. If you say to the patient, we will do everything we can for you, we'll use all of our techniques and all of our wisdom, and we know that it's going to work. We just know it's going to work. I'm not making any promises, but you start believing. You start knowing that the things we're doing for you work, plus the things you're doing for yourself. And then the magic takes place. But doctors are afraid to say that because they get their self wound up with giving descriptions and prescriptions and what have you of diagnosis of something where they say you're going to be okay, and they know by practice and by experience that they're not going to be okay. And they're not going to be okay because ordinarily they give up. And of course, if you give up, then you are gone. Then the show is over. And this is what most people do. They go to the hospital and they say they're giving up. Well, if we would call the hospitals, like I recommend they call them in Europe, rather than Gesundheitshaus, or Krankenhaus, house for the sick, call it a Gesundheit house, a house for the whole people, for wholeness and wellness. You see, if we teach wholeness and wellness, if we teach people to go into their self as a whole and well person, if we teach the nations of the world to do this, I go down to Nigeria and I talk to the children and I talk to the adults in Nigeria and I say, let's sing that all is in divine order, that you got the best legislators, the best people in the world running your country, and they're fantastic, but they're not. Well, hey, you're putting new seeds in motion. You're putting new causes in motion. And many of your parents are the legislators because you're in school here, you know. And I talk to these kids, and these kids go home and tell their parents that. And some of their parents don't understand me. I might be a Socrates at some point and be given hemlock. But I still go out and do my thing. I teach the children to think that they can put a new cause in motion. They can put a whole new lifestyle in motion for themselves and for their country and for their world. And I go to Switzerland, and you say, well, what's Switzerland got to do? They got everything. No, they don't. Switzerland has a country which is now being torn apart by what has been happening in the money market. And Switzerland is being chastised for doing something they've been doing all along. And everybody knows they do it. But somebody came along and tried to be unhappy about something, and so they put a clink, a wrench in the gears, trying to mess it up. Well, that too will pass. It'll pass. And as it passes, it'll be forgotten. And as it's forgotten, life goes on in its beautiful way. What is it that remains unforgotten? What remains unforgotten is that Switzerland is a very wealthy country, and it always will be. Switzerland is a money country because that's what they deal in. They love dealing in money. Now, I say, let Nigeria be the garden spot of the world. Let it be the garden spot of tourism, where people love to come to Nigeria and enjoy the beautiful highways, the beautiful roads, and the beautiful beaches, and the beautiful people. Nigeria is a big and beautiful country that could just be so fantastically filled with lovely people. I think that all the people I have met from Nigeria, and perhaps I've only met the best, and that's what all I'll ever meet, but all the people I've met from Nigeria are brilliant. They're geniuses. And their children are geniuses, and their attitudes are geniuses. And I go to Abuja, and I meet all the people there, and I go down to Owerri and all these other places, and I'm taken in to meet these wonderful people, and they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. And I tell them about the latest scientific developments that I've been reading about and studying about, and they say, yes, now, and when they said this, and they're literate, they're aware of it, and they're on top of these things. Now, here they are considered a third world country, here they are considered to be lesser, where really they are probably even more. And it's just a matter of a child who's raised with self-discipline is a master. A child who's not raised with self-discipline is a terror. A country that is raised with self-discipline is a master country. One that is not raised with it is a failure, is unhappy, and is always looking for a handout. Well, Nigeria doesn't have to look for a handout. It's got the world's eighth largest oil reserves under it, and it has everything going for it, and merely has to program these things so that they are benefiting the people. And once Nigeria does everything it can to benefit its people, its own riches will soar beyond measure, because that is at least what we try to do in America, the country of the people. And we have done our very best to keep our legislators on the ball with doing it for the people, running highways across areas where nobody drives, you know, but it's the few that do, it's there. And everything that they do, the country builds more hospitals than they need, and they even have empty hospitals now. The country builds more schools than they need, and they have empty schools. And we have good education, we have good things, and this is only because the people demand it. And the people believe they're worth it. And the people in Nigeria are worth it. The people in Switzerland are worth it. The people in every country that I go to, they're worth it. When I was in Russia, I was speaking at the psychiatric hospitals up there. And what an interesting experience. I spoke to the universities too, Moscow and Leningrad and St. Petersburg there. And it was fantastic. When I dealt with the people at Prague, Czechoslovakia, and Charles University and so on, as I dealt with the people, they all, yes, 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 this is what we want. And then what happened? They blossomed. And then what happened in Russia? Pop! The balloon burst, and all these small nations came out. Now, you say, well, it's now a separatist country, and with all these small nations each vying for their own claim to fame, what's going to happen? Just what I planned. I planned that Russia is to be one of the, not Russia, but the Russian satellites in the Russian countries are to be self-sufficient, autonomous in every way, magnificent and producing, because the fields are great producers. They work on the state farms and then they have their own farm which produces more than the state farm produces because it's more abundantly there. But these are the things that can be done. And they're done by people who believe in themselves. There are people in Russia, that is in the Russian satellites, who still would like to have Stalin, you know, running the country. Because they remember when Stalin ran the country, certain things were beneficial. Yeah. But they forgot about the grime, and they forgot about the corruption that was underneath.
And there was 20 million who were killed.
Yeah, and the 20 million who were killed. Just without
people.
Without even batting an eyelash, he just did it because it was to his pleasure or to his feeling that he's protecting himself. Now, does one man need to be protected at the cost of the lives of 20 million? No. It doesn't work out that way. But I went in Russia and I spoke my word of positive, loving, one-pointedness. I wasn't alone. And I'm not alone because there is a cadre of people who want to do this. They want to think positive for Russia. And look at England. What a silly country England is. England has the possibility of having the greatest role model in the world to guide them into perfection, but they don't use it. They take the young princes and they let them go out and associate with the commoners, and as they do this, they're no longer princes. No. They're just common people. And is that who you want to rule your country? Now, you look at America, the people that we have ruling our country, not ruling it, who are guiding it, are uncommon people, very uncommon people. Roosevelt came from a very wealthy family. All these people came from, and you look at Obama. Obama, he came out of no place, but he is a brilliant genius. He is a brilliant man who has a charisma that's enough to... to wipe out any negativity in the world. Now, he is a prince. He is what every queen mother would like their child to be.
Even the Ku Klux Klan like him.
Yes. And isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
They said, no, I mean, it was surprising because people were interviewed, you know,
and
about his presidency. You know, the Ku Klux Klan didn't mind his being a president.
But what is happening by that? What's happening by that? He believes in himself.
Yes.
He believes in his program.
He's not afraid of anybody. He didn't worry about the Ku Klux Klan or anybody.
No. And we were at a point of change there, Hillary Clinton or something else. And all of these people who were in the running were weak kittens compared to Obama.
Yes.
And Obama just had to walk away with it. Now, time will tell just how wonderful he really is. And let's continue to say how wonderful he is, not whether he's bad, but how wonderful he is. And as we say how wonderful he is, we're putting that seed into our garden. We're putting that seed into the cosmos, into the oneness, into the universal mind, the universal reality, allness. And in this universal consciousness, when we plant that seed, and is the universal consciousness filled with the proper nutrients and filled with the proper whatever it takes to make a seed grow beautiful? Oh, yes, it is. And so are we going to have a gigantic forest, you might say, of positive attitudes about Obama and about his program and about the program that he wants for the country, that he wants for the world? You know, he's not a man who just thought of the United States.
No.
He's thinking of the world. He's over here this month in April, and he's with the British Prime Minister, and he's with the German and everybody else. Yeah. And what is he going to do? He is talking about, let's work together. He's not talking about peace, and he's not talking about economy. He's talking about, let's work together for a united world.
Even to the Iranians.
Every other president's afraid of doing that.
Yes.
Then he's going there where angels fear to tread. Now, do you think somebody's going to kill him? Do you think somebody's going to annihilate? He is the right man. He's like King Arthur. He's so protected. He has Merlin, you know. He has this wonderful, magical creation about him. And what he has, we have. Anything that he has that we admire so greatly, we have it. And it's up to us to start living as though we have it, and let it out, and let it out on all stops and all areas and all expressions of ourselves, because it's exciting. It is really exciting. But it's going to do no good if we're going to go in and say, but, you know, this might work, but this can work, but, you know. If we say, this can work, and then we say, but everyone has to get together and do it. No. The only person who has to get together and do it is you and me alone. We put that motion in that cause in motion, and we put that cause into effect so that we can have it as the most beautiful experience in our life. But it's something that we do. It's something that we are. It's something that we create to be so magnificent, so wonderful, that the whole world just benefits. That all the monkeys in the world have parents, and all the children in the world have the opportunity to have good health and education. All the children in the world have the opportunity to live in a world which is a world of love and harmony and peace and beauty, because that's what came inside of us. The world of love and peace and harmony and beauty is something that we create from within ourselves. And as we create it from within ourselves, what happens? It reflects out there. The world is, unfortunately or fortunately, a reflection of our thought. And if our thought is wonderful, that world is wonderful. If our thought is limited, that world is limited. And what do we want? What do we want from the world? Do we want that world to be the most elegant thing that could ever be? If we do,
peace and harmony.
Yeah, peace and harmony for everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Not just for a few, but for everybody. Who's going to do that? Now, do you, as you walk down the street, we were just speaking earlier of his going into the hospital to have himself checked. And as he went in there, he had an international situation.
It's all racist.
He's
targeted by a West Indian, checked by a Chinese person. My blood pressure was done by an Indian, and the person who prepared me for the theater was white. So by the time I finished, you know, I seen about four or five different people from different races.
And who was the doctor?
The doctor was white. Yes.
And here you are, a black man with a white doctor, you know? And so it makes a difference.
Five people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Before my operation, were all different
working races. Working in harmony.
And they were all, this one gave this, did this, and then the next person, and then the next person, you know?
And you didn't think a thing about
it? No.
You just went through it. Hey, so you're an Indian lady taking my pulse.
Yeah.
Oh, big deal. Yeah. And so you're whatever doing this here. Hey, cool. Do you know your job? Oh, yes. Have you been doing it long? Oh, yes. I've been working at this now 3 years, you know. And when are they going to give you your license? Ho, ho, ho. I got my license 3 years ago. I did my internship before that.
It was quite interesting, you know.
But you see,
in a short time in the hospital, I mean, I hadn't spent 30 minutes, and I've seen almost five races.
Yeah. And you didn't think a thing about it.
No.
It was just like the most natural thing in the world.
The most natural thing in the world.
Now they talk about the Tower of Babel and the changing of the tongues of the people,
yes,
and making them speak all in different tongues. Well, that's interesting, but I think it was merely a time of challenge for people to learn to live together, even though they could not speak the same language.
Yes.
Do children play in the playground, box with each other from different races?
They do.
And they don't speak the language?
Yeah.
But by the time they come out of the playbox, they know all about their friends. They know how. They know their life story. They know everything. And they didn't even ask questions. They just listen to their hearts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they come and tell their parents, well, da, 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 how'd you know that? Well, he told me. Well, he speaks Iranian and you speak English. And you know, how do you know that? Well, my friend over there who spoke Spanish, he told me. It's the craziest thing. But that's what life is all about.
Yeah.
It's taking all of this that seems so estranged, so drawn away from us, and bringing it together as a harmonious package.
Yes.
And you see, you didn't even know you were going to have that great experience when you went in.
No.
And then there it was, just thrown at you.
Just within a word, I could see so many people. And also, when I talk of, you're talking of the Tower of Babel.
Yes.
You know, I was in a meeting where a chap said he attended a synod meeting where they want church unity, you know. They want the churches to unite. They have Presbyterian, they have Anglican, they have Baptist. And I said, but why do you people want to unite anyway? Oh, so that the church will want. I said, but the story of the Bible said that we were divided in different languages. You know, why do you want to come together now? Why? For a reason or the other, you've gone to different churches and so on, and you're all saying the same thing. Why do you want to come together? Will it make it easier for you to say what you're saying? You can do what you're doing in your own place. I said, why do I want to be a Catholic?
Mm-hmm.
Or an Anglican? I said,
anything.
I mean, let me do
the
thing. As you are all preaching, isn't it? You are preaching God. Why do you want to come together to do it?
Yeah.
After you broke up.
And what's your answer to them?
Well, you can do it from where you are.
In other words,
you don't need to be together.
To be united like a
yeah, just united talk world. In the same language you are talking and tell the people the same thing. I said, but you are all preaching God and Christ. Why do you need to come together?
Are you trying to say that if all the people of the world were like children, and they were all placed in the same sandbox, they'd have a good time together, and they wouldn't speak the same language, and yet they would communicate with each other perfectly.
Yeah, I mean,
and they don't have to change.
No, the Bible has been translated into 1 million languages, and you are saying it in your own language. I mean, when I go home and I read the Bible in my own tongue, now you are telling me to be a Presbyterian, I should come and join Anglican and join Catholic and join all that. Why? I said, we've divided already. We are speaking the same thing. We are reading the same book. We don't need to join to do it. Just do it in your own way, you know?
What would happen to the world if everyone spoke English?
Well,
they'd still have dialects.
Yeah.
And well, dialects would be as sometimes so strong you couldn't understand people.
Yeah. From my village, to Umuahia, which is the capital, is 40 miles. From my village to Umuahia, there are 12 dialects. you have the Arochukwu people, you have the Tutu people, then you have the Hechewa people, then you have the Ohafia people, then you have the Abariba people, then the Ibere people, then the Zuakale people. All we are speaking Igbo, and if Abariba person speaks, I won't even understand. And we are all speaking the same language, Igbo. I'm talking of 40 miles only, you know. So I said, was the Tower of Babel built in Igbo land? You know, and you go from Nisha to Enugu, it's the same thing. There are so many. But I said, whoever did it knew what he was doing. We don't need to speak the same language. You know, you call one, Otu. Then this one say Olu. They all know that it's Otu. Why don't we just stay where we are? Why all this headache anyway? You know, we are claiming one is better than the other. I said, why?
Improper propriety.
Yeah.
We want to own and possess and control in our way, instead of allowing everyone to be how they want to be and
in
finding
their own
out
way. I mean, just say what you are saying. It doesn't matter which language, you know.
Yeah.
If you are saying God, whether you call it in Hebrew or English, it's God.
Yeah.
So let's. Why are we having a headache? You know.
Well, in the Hebrew language, from the early days, they did not have a word for God. The word, there was no word for God.
Yes.
Because God,
they
was
were too afraid.
Too afraid, and it was just too grand to be given a word.
Yeah.
And like in the Harry Potter movies, they have this evil man, and they cannot speak his name. And the thing is, as soon as Harry Potter spoke his name, because he wasn't afraid, then the thing started solving itself. But that's just one story. But truly, this is what we do. We're afraid to just be ourselves and have fun. Now, isn't that what I tell you?
Yes.
Be ourselves and have fun.
You speak in the language they are comfortable. I say, and I take my children from some, I say, oh, they don't speak Igbo. They should speak Igbo. I say, what is your problem? They haven't complained yet. You understand them, don't you? They have to speak. I say, why do they have to speak Igbo? They don't need to. The language is for communication. If you understand somebody, that's all you need to do, whether he's speaking in English or German or what. But he has to know. I say, why? For you or for the person? No. They break their heads over nothing. You know? I mean, I went to a wedding in my village on the 30th of December. And in my very village, this minister from a Bilbury village is preaching in English. He's talking and somebody is interpreting.
Oh.
And I just sat there. I couldn't believe it.
I've been through that.
You know, he's talking in English to my villagers and somebody is trying to interpret what he's saying in Igbo. He's an Igbo. The Bible is read in Igbo. He preaches in English.
Wow.
Why didn't he preach in Igbo?
Why didn't he preach in Igbo, which he speaks very well? No. So maybe it's to make him more mistaken. I couldn't understand it. So I sat there throughout the ceremony and I finished. When I came out, so I asked him, I said, but why? I didn't ask him. Am I offended? But I said, why does he speak in English to you people here in my village?
Yeah.
He said, oh, he does that often. I said, well.
That's what you do. Oh,
yeah.
Well, whenever we try to change people over to our way of thinking and our way of doing, if we do it by how we live, that's beautiful.
Yes.
If we do it by trying to make them change their words or change... I go to Nigeria and I speak to the people there and I speak English. Of course, that's what I know.
Yes.
And they speak their dialect.
Yes.
And so we're sitting in the car and driving along, and they start speaking dialect in front of me, you know. And that's very discourteous, because then I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yes.
And so I immediately say, okay, cool, and I go off to enjoy the countryside.
Yes.
And they have me there for such a short time to share the attitudes and thinking that I have, you'd think that they would want to zero in on
everything so that you know what's going on. Yes.
But they don't do that. And why don't they do that? Because they think it's charming to go back into their dialect, you know, and to go back into that. Now, if I were from Wisconsin, as I am, and I speak to people, and I use the dialect from Wisconsin, in New York, they might not understand me.
Yeah.
And in Texas, they might not understand me. And in other states, they wouldn't understand me because they have dialects.
Yeah.
And even in Texas, you have five or six dialects, or maybe more, and the people don't understand each other. But there's one man who is on television who is the news broadcaster for the national news, and he speaks the perfect dialect that all the people understand.
Yes.
And it happens to be English, but it's a perfect dialect.
Yeah.
And in America, we are allowing Spanish people, Mexicans, to come into the country.
Yeah.
And we don't like America. We really don't like it. because we are changing the rules.
Yeah.
We are making Spanish necessary in all government documents, anything, so it's Spanish and English,
yes,
so that the people who come can read it and know what they're doing. Well, the people should not come to the United States to become citizens unless they learn the language of that country.
Yes.
No. You go to your village,
yeah,
and if you don't know the language of your village, you're going to be an outsider.
Yes, you're not
going to
fit.
So you're not going to try to be universal. You're going to be one with whatever the community is that you're in. And this, the United States is a community, and so when people come from Germany, they have to learn English, Italian, and every other language. But the thing is, at first they try to have little communities in which they had this going on.
Yes.
But when they did this, they became separatists.
That's it.
And they were separating themselves from the legal system, from the medical system, from the educational system, from everything. And in doing that, what did they do? They made their particular culture less desirable in the country.
Yeah.
And people, unfortunately, called them names and things like that. And that's just because they wanted to be separate. And they didn't want to flow with what the culture was that they moved into.
Yeah.
Now, if I move into Nigeria, or let's say I move into France, I must learn French.
Yeah.
If I don't know French, I'm not going to be happy there.
No, the chefs won't speak
German or English. We're not making one world.
I mean, this is what we have in Luton. You see, Luton, we have factories, car factories. You have Vauxhall, Bedford, and so on. And we have a lot of indigenous people. There are Indians who came, worked in the factories without learning English. You know, they worked all their life. These are old people now. They don't speak any English.
Yeah.
And they work in the factories. When they want to sign, they put their thumb mark to get their salary.
Yeah, yeah.
And they worked all their lives without speaking. They go to Indian shops to buy things.
Yeah,
so
they
can't go to all these shops.
Yeah.
You know. Now, you know, to become a citizen now, it's just a reason that you have to speak English. You know, they've made it a condition.
That's good.
But before, you could speak any language you like,
yeah,
and still, you know, you come in and you say, now, there's a paper by the Australian Prime Minister, the new chap, and he wrote it, a friend of mine sent it to me. He said, why are we apologetic to be Australians? You know. He said, Australia is a Christian country, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It speaks English,
mm-hmm,
all right?
Mm-hmm.
And there is democracy in Australia. Now, we don't apologize for anything. If you want to come here, you accept it is a Christian country. So don't want us to accept your religion.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We speak English.
That's
so
right.
You have to know English to get on. And you mustn't expect us to follow your custom. It's like here, they want Muslim schools. They want Sharia law and so on. He says, nobody forced you to come to Australia.
Stay in your own country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't ask you to come.
Mm-hmm.
But if you leave your country to come here, just accept us as we are, you know?
Yeah.
We are a Christian country. So don't tell us, oh, please change to something else. No. We speak English, so learn English and speak English with us.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to learn English, then you can't be part of us. And then don't want to change our culture. You know, you say, oh, you know, like here, they say, oh, this is the dress, we dress to school, we must cover our head.
No.
He says, no, stay in your country and cover your head.
That's right.
If you come here, accept our values. You say, government has always been apologetic, you know. Let's do this so that this won't be offended.
The United States too.
Yeah, but we didn't go and call them from their country. You came here. If you came and accepted our values and you want to live here, you live with our values. And what is causing all this trouble, like in England, is all these concessions. I'm telling you, Luton, because I know.
It's true.
These people who work in the factory, there's a landlord that my family stayed before I came back from England. He's a West Indian, and he's been here all his life. He never learned to read and write. And there's a school there, free for you to learn to read and write. It's only when my wife told him, he said, look, Your children are going to school, they come back. You can't know what they are. They say, you know, parents day, you go, you don't know what they are talking.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just go down here?
Mm-hmm. And learn.
It costs you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You come back from the factory, you go there, they teach you free in the evening. And he went. That's how he learned to read and write.
He did go.
He did go.
Great.
He did go. His children are now graduates and so.
Great.
But he was working in the same factory that most of these Indians work. He put his thumb to. So my wife said, "What is that?" He says, "Oh, ink." I said, "What ink?" I use it to put my thumbprint. He said, "You use it to put your thumbprint to take your salary."
Sign checks with X's.
Yeah, and you see nothing wrong.
Yeah. But somebody encouraged him to go to school.
Yeah. Oh, he
and
went.
Do it.
He went.
And yeah. He probably is so proud of himself.
Oh, no. He was very happy.
He's very proud of himself.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
But you are it's surprising. You come, you see the people who come, like, from India. They want to remain Indian.
Mm-hmm.
But you are not in India.
Yeah, that's right.
We have
shops.
If you
want to remain Indian, go stay there.
Buses, they are written in English. Or you go to the council, they might write in Gujarati. You know those forms, and they give interpreters. But the bus route is not going to be written in Gujarati, no. The motorway is going to be written in English, and you want to drive. So they say, "Oh, we want to learn the signs in our language." He said, "But there are no signs in your language on the road. So you still have to learn this one." No, the Australian, the new one, wrote this thing out. Anybody come, he said, "Look, we are white, no, we are democratic."
We're white, yeah.
No,
sure,
no,
yeah.
White. No.
Here we are, yeah.
No, he didn't use color. He says, "We are democratic, we are Christian,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and we speak English."
Right.
If you want those, tolerate those things, you come. If you don't want to tolerate what we have, stay in your home, don't come. We won't quarrel with you. That's it.
And it's not a matter that we respect your religion or don't respect your religion. It's just that your religion is not ours. And so
You came to us.
The country's religion is such.
This is what it is. That's what we accept, you know. It's Christianity that is our basic religion. We speak English and we are not going to write any other languages. This is what we write.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you leave your home and you say you're a Muslim and you come, don't. We are not going to bother about what you are, but you have to accept what we are.
What you were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come, you know the language we use, and use that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want any other language. And so on.
Now, when are you going to run for the legislature?
No. I want to be ruled. I don't want anybody to rule me.
No, but you could offer some very powerful thinking.
Yeah, no. When I talk in my village, they say, "Oh, you should be a politician." I say, "I'm already a politician."
Beautiful.
I'm representing myself. Yeah, because great. I tell myself, why are you people breaking your head over nothing? You know, they have a land dispute in my village. And I say, look, people have been killed for nothing, for land, which is not being used.
Yeah.
Why do you people continue making the same mistake? Nobody uses this land. You don't need to kill anybody. Look, the law court is there. You go there. They will bring this and bring this, and you will agree. Oh, we can't allow them to take our land. See, nobody can take the land. You all be there, they die, and the land will still be there. Nobody takes anybody's land. And they say, "Oh, you are not patriotic." Say, "Yes, I'm not." When patriotic was the life of somebody, my job is to keep people alive, not to get them killed. I said, it's so simple. Don't go and fight over a land, piece of land. You kill this person, you kill that person. In the end, you have to settle over the table in the court. Go to the court and tell them, "Look, this is what I've encroached on our land." And they will call them. It will be settled. But you are saying you won't agree. They go there, they come, you kill somebody. It doesn't change anything. And they say, "Oh, you don't understand." I say, "Ah, what is it to understand? Oh, you come back once in a year and so on." I said, "But nobody has ever used that piece of land for any." The land is too far from my village anyway.
What happened to you when you went to Saudi Arabia?
Oh, when I went to Saudi Arabia,
you spoke their language.
I didn't need to.
Oh, you didn't need? Oh,
no.
You didn't need to because you were in an American clinic or the English clinic?
No, I had interpreters. I came there, all I need, I said, you bring your women, I treat them, and you pay me. That's it.
I see.
You called me. You know I speak English.
So in other words, you weren't inculcating yourself into their philosophy, their religion,
no,
and their lifestyle.
No.
You merely were delivering gas to their pumps.
That's it. Mm-hmm. I said, you employed me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was there in England, and you advertised, and you got me, and you said, come, treat our women. That is the contract. Mm-hmm. You didn't say I should learn Arabic. Mm-hmm. No, I don't want to learn Arabic. This I should become a Muslim. No, I don't need to. I have my own already. Our agreement is this medicine, you know?
And they accepted that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
No, I had a wonderful time. I had interpreters, you know? If they come, they are speaking English, they interpret and so on. They knew what I was saying. I didn't need to learn Arabic.
They needed his service.
Yeah.
You they needed his service.
Yeah.
And I needed their money.
Right. But you gave a service as a gynecologist.
No. I gave my service perfect. You
right,
know?
Right.
I did it happily, you know.
Right.
And they paid me.
Right.
You know? But when they came to religion, I said, no, I didn't come for that.
Yeah.
I already have that, you know. And they said, oh, why don't you learn Arabic? I said, but I came here for a few years. What am I doing with Arabic? When I learn it, I go. I don't need Arabic.
You go home, you wouldn't use it.
Yeah, I won't use it. I said, I've already learned enough languages.
Mm-hmm.
This is temporary. I said, just give me an interpretation of what I'm saying. You know, and that's it. No. I leave people, let them do what they like.
Yeah.
You know, no problem. I said, I don't want to learn Arabic.
Yeah.
If I want to do that, I do it in Luton.
Well, when these people come from other countries to England and are hired here to do jobs, and they're hired to do the jobs, then that's a different situation too.
Yeah.
If they come here because they want to become part of our community or part of the nation of England, then they, of course, are going to speak English.
That's it. These people come to leave.
And learn the program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know why you're here. They come not. They are not coming to go.
Yeah.
They come to settle here.
They don't
and you'll be here. We speak English everywhere, in the trains, in the buses, everything is in English. No.
Right.
You don't want to learn English, but you want to work in an English factory and be paid in English money, and you live in an English castle house.
Yes.
All that.
Yes.
I met a man, a driver, a taxi driver, he who carried me. I said, how many children have you? He said, I have 14.
14?
Four.
My goodness.
And the council hasn't given me enough accommodation for 14 of them. I said, oh, but how do you have 14 children? He said, oh, Allah gave them to me. I said, is that so?
Good for him.
I said, yes, Allah gave them to you. So why doesn't Allah give you the accommodation? Why are you worrying the council? He said, oh, the council should give me accommodation, no matter the number of children. I said, but you are the council, because all of us pay that money. Why should the council give you two houses when it's only one family? You chose to have 14. He said, no, it's my right. And he was, I said, please, just hold that steering.
You don't shake him up too much.
Yeah. Just hold that steering. I said, but you are now saying, is it fault of the council that you have 14 children they haven't given you? He said, oh, my name has been on the waiting list for many years. I said, how many houses have you seen that can contain 14 plus 2? That is 16. He said he hasn't. I said, so how do you expect the council? They have to knock down two houses to put you in. He couldn't understand why the council couldn't. I said, no houses are built to contain 16 people.
Yeah.
If they are built like that, it's a block with different flat levels. I said, no. Now, think of it this way. The council wants accommodation that is suitable for you. They haven't got it. And they need to build a new house for you. So they are not thinking, if they build a new house for you, another person has 10, they build a new house, how will they work out from that council tax we all pay? I say, it won't go around. That is why the council is doing that. You're on the waiting list. And I don't know how long you'll be. He said, well, I didn't think of it that way. I said, in your home, how many houses contain 16 people?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He said, none.
Mm-hmm.
And it had never occurred to him He says it's a council fault that he hasn't been accommodated.
Where do you find the patience to offer such advice?
No.
Oh,
do
you?
When they bribe me, I talk to them, you know? Yeah. I talk to them.
He has a television show.
when I enter, you see, I don't sit. When I enter a taxi, I don't sit on the back.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's like this London bar. I sit in the middle. But in Luton, it's ordinary car. So I sit by them. I sit in front, you know, right. The taxi driver, you know.
Right.
And he says, how are you? I say, how are you? Then, you know, they ask many questions. And I,
sure.
Yeah, and as they ask questions, like if they come and call me from my house, you know, oh, that is a big house. I say, yes, it is big. That's how they start their story. You know? Then they start saying, oh, you know, I have this and that, you know, I need a big house. So they start telling me story. And I listen. When they finish, it's difficult for them to take any responsibility. They always feel it's somebody else's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to show them that he says, oh, Allah gave me 14 years. I said, so you didn't touch your wife at all? Yeah, I said, you didn't?
Yeah.
He said, I did, but so why would Allah give you 14 and give the other person 2? You mean Allah is partial? Yeah. So I'm not arguing about how many Allah gave you, but I'm saying that Allah will provide for the number that is given you. And that Allah will do it through the council. And you have to see with this council, you know? And you and me are the council. I say, if they ask you to pay £100 more than what you pay for council, will you pay? Oh, no, that would be too much. I say, so, where do you want it to get the money? And we are driving all along. By the time we reach where we are going, he has had a lesson.
You've been seed planting.
Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. So when he comes, oh, I carried you before, you know. And there's a man, you know, who, in fact, he had asthmatic symptoms, you know. So he was complaining on this. I said, but you have all this. Why don't you go to the doctor, you know? He said, I've been praying. I said, good.
Yeah.
I've been praying to Allah.
Yeah.
I said, that is very good. But why don't you just go to your GP? All the same, why are you praying to Allah? You know? Because he was, oh, I'm not feeling well. This is, because they drive for somebody else, you know? So, when he carried me next time, he said, oh,
mm-hmm.
You know, I took your advice. And I went to the doctor and he checked me and he found this is it. And he gave me to them and I feel better. I said, look, you would have done that from beginning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
While you are praying, you move your hand.
Mm-hmm.
That is what it is. I said, mm-hmm. You just don't sit.
Mm-hmm.
I say, Allah has 6.5 billion people to look after. Yeah. So unless you move your hand, he may not see you. No, they are very interesting, you know? The way they reason.
You're
They're always blaming somebody else for something.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I've had many incidents with them when they take me by taxi. You know?
Well, there are not many people like you who talk to people like that and share unconditionally, without judgment, without being angry at them for being doing things that
they ask me questions.
Yeah.
You know, they ask me, how much did you buy the house?
Mm-hmm.
I say, but do you want to buy it? I don't answer. I don't give them direct answer.
Yeah, that's good.
I say, you don't. Do you want to buy? He say no, but it must have cost a lot. I say yes, but you don't need to know the price. You know, if you are not buying it, if you want to buy a house like mine, then I tell you the price. So I don't actually tell, but I mean it's rude for them to ask such. But I don't tell them.
Oh, that is beautiful. Well, you're planting seeds so broadcast throughout the world. It is amazing and beautiful. And it's going to continue.
It does.
It's going to
continue. I said, there's a man who says his son is diabetic. You know, and they give this injection. I say, look, your son is not the only person who is diabetic. There are so many. Oh, it's terrible. I say, what is terrible about his injecting insulin? I said, many people do it. It's generally a thought. And they inject it. And they live for 100 years.
Yeah.
You know? So, don't take it so big. Say, but, me and my wife, we are so protected. I said, well, you don't need to be. I said, hundreds of children do the same thing. When we teach you in the hospital, teach your son in the hospital, we have taught many other people. It's not just you. Oh, I didn't know that. I said, but We didn't invent that thing for you. It must have been tasted, you know, before. And your son will live a long life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that he has to inject that thing. Mm-hmm. Life. Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean you have it for life? I said, but he's not going to get cured of, you know, the insulin doesn't cure. It's only to manage him. Oh, I thought that when he grows bigger, it will stop. I said, no. When you go ask them questions, as long as he takes that thing, he continue, no problem. So it's good he learns that needle thing. Very simple things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, they make a big thing out of it. You know, it thinks that, oh, this injection, after some time it will stop. You know, and that why should his son learn how to give it himself? I said, but you want the nurse to come every day to your house? Oh, no, no, no. I said, so, the easiest thing is for your son to learn how to give it to himself. He won't be crying when somebody does it.
Sure.
No, no, no. I have very interesting people in that route. You know, very interesting. Yeah.
Well, when you're in charge of your life, when you're aware of who you are and you're content with who you are, you don't feel you have to protect yourself at all. You just let come what comes and you share it, and they learn lessons that may not be showing the immediate moment you give the lesson, but it sinks into their consciousness.
It does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a neighbor of mine came to my house. Oh, that's a lot. He said, oh, I want to buy your house. Not my main house. I have a property there, you know, in Ligrave Road. He says, oh, I knew you when I was small. I was 5, you know, and all these years. Now I'm a lawyer, and I want to establish. You know, that house next to yours is mine. My father gave it to me. Now I want to buy your house. I said, why? He said, oh, because when I, in my law practice, I expand and I do this. I said, but why do you want to buy my house? I don't want to sell my house. No, I'll make you a good offer. I said, do you think I didn't sell it because I didn't have a good offer? He said, no, I said to my brother, I'll go and see you, and that you sell your house to me. I said, well, that is very good thinking. I don't want to sell my house. Oh, all right, I'll give you another house. This is about a month ago. I said, I have another house somewhere given by my father. Then we do an exchange. I said, I don't want to sell my house. Then he brought his brother, you know, a big brother. He said, look.
Persistent, isn't he?
Yeah. He said, I have 4 properties. Pick any of them, you know, so that you sell your house. I said, I don't want to sell my house. When I want to sell my house, you'll be the first to know. But as of now, I don't want to sell it. He said, well, why do you not want to sell? You don't want money. I said, if I want money, I won't come to you. You want my house. I am not ready to sell it. Why don't you settle for that? All right. I'm going to give you a house which is with commercial area, you know, there's living area and then shop below and so on in a different area. I said, look, you continue making the same mistake. The first thing I said is, I don't want to sell my house now. You are trying to make me sell my house now. That is the problem. It's not money. If it's money, I said, my neighbor there wanted to buy my house 2 years ago, and I said, no, I don't want to sell yet. I'm sure you know that. He said, yes. But I said, I'll go and tell you, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. I said, thank you very much for this offer. But you have made me an offer that I can't refuse. You know, they spent so much time trying to convince me to sell my house. I said, but I don't want to sell my house. No. If I want to sell my house, I'll let you know. But you made your effort. You know, you came, you phoned me and you came to my house. You know, but they want to buy my, he made up his mind. He said his house next is theirs. So they are planning what to do with the property. That is mine. So I have to sell so that they do what they want. I said, no, Oh, so you don't want to help me? I said, my job is not to help you. You help yourself. You want my help by selling my property. Then it's no help. Oh, but you know, we have known you since I was small. Now, if you give me your property to buy, then you help me to establish. I said, no, it's not my job to help you to establish. It's your job to establish. When I'm selling, you can buy my house, but if you tell me I should sell my house because you said so, I say no. I won't sell my house. I'm not ready to sell my house. All right, I'll cover your lawyer's fees. I cover your rights. I say, but if I sell my house, it's still against my will, you know, because you want it. I will make you inducement. I say, don't worry about it. Just sign. Everything will be covered. But what I'm trying to say is, they made up their minds from their house what they are going to do. And you have to agree with them. That's it. I said, no. Don't make me an offer of money, because anytime I sell my house, I'm going to get money anyway. But I don't want to sell my house now. So they went. But we are neighbors. All right. I didn't know we are neighbors, you know, they say we are neighbors, and they came along. I said, but why do you think I will sell the house anyway? I've rented it, I'm getting income from it. Yeah. They say, well, that's why if you don't want that, we make an exchange. But I don't want your house. You want mine. I don't want yours. Why should I have your house and you have mine? Oh, it will be a good exchange, you know, mine is more valuable. I said, so keep your valuable. This is about a month ago, you know. I said, no, I can't sell my house because you want to buy it. If I want to sell, I will sell when I want to sell. No. Oh, you know, house prices are falling. I said, you are not the only one in this country. Everybody knows that. Anyway,
people get a thought in their mind.
Yeah.
They want to persist on
it. They persist and they think you have to. They worked it out in their heads. Here is brother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All they are going to say to convince me.
Mm-hmm.
But I say, look, the first is, I do not want to sell my house now. And I'm sticking to that statement. I say, you can make all your offers and so on. If money was my object, then I say, oh, because you offer me money. I say, no. I like my house to be mine. Why should I sell it to you now? Because you... Oh, so that you do me a favor, you know, help me. I say, no, my job is not to help you, it's to help myself.
That's right. And you help yourself,
yeah,
by following your own principles.
My own principles, I say, no, if I sell it, yeah, I'd be saying, why did I sell my house? Because somebody came to ask me and said he had money. I say, no, I won't do that.
You follow your own principles.
That's it.
Now, what are your principles about yourself? Are you number one?
Oh. I'm more than number one, even.
That's the first time I heard that. Would you like to describe what you mean by being more than number one?
So I'm one and two and three.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
There is no other number.
That's it. So
one.
Before I go to the others, I'm even half. If half is better than one. No, it's me and my daughter. You know? My daughter says, you say you are number one, you know? I say, yes. You know, the other day we were talking.
Yeah.
So, you are number... I say, yes, my dear. I am number one. For me, I'm number... Please, be number one to yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
Yeah, everybody should be number one. I say...
That's right.
When I put myself number one, then I go to somebody else. But I am number one. That's all. I'm not saying you should be two. For me, I want you to be one.
Exactly.
Everybody should be number one.
And everything revolves around you when you're number one.
Yeah.
It is not a matter of what anybody else wants,
no,
or what anybody else,
no,
tries to impress,
no,
upon us.
Yeah.
We are number one, and therefore everything goes our way. That's like with Chrissy, remember?
Yeah.
I was saying, Chrissy, come on, chin up there. Act like you're a very proper woman.
Yeah.
You're a queen, you're,
yeah,
a dowager,
yeah,
you're in charge of everything. And the moment you start acting like number two,
yeah,
people say, I don't know. I doubt that person.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to be safe with that person and happy with that person, because they're not sure about themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do. But when you're sure of yourself, when you're number one, and you're right on top of your own world,
yeah,
then everybody says, yes, I believe in you. You say, a handshake. And don't you want a contract? Well, if my handshake isn't enough, then any contract's not enough. I'll find a way to weasel out of the contract if I want to. But with a handshake, it's done. It's done. I've made my decision. I'm happy. I'm pleased. I'm content with what I have decided upon. And it's a real art to be a handshaker. I know my dad, during the Depression time, he dealt with people and he built houses for them. And there wasn't a lot of money around. But they all paid him cash all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And everything was done on a handshake. And they would say, build it. He'd say, well, don't you want to know the price? He said, I know you will give me the best price.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really confident. And then he would say, well, now, I want to go and buy this lumber and that. And they would say, go ahead. I know you will look for the best deal. You'll look for the most the competent lumber that we could use, the lumber that will establish what we want. I have absolute confidence in you.
Yeah.
And that's all handshake. And if we could all learn to do that, you know, what a wonderful world this is.
Yeah.
And we are masters of ourselves when we do that.
And the world is changing. Because when I was in Saudi, I went to the bank with my boss, you know, in a Saudi bank.
Yeah.
And I went there. And there was this man, he was raving, you know. He was very annoyed. And they were speaking in Arabic. And I said, I asked my boss, I said, what is he raving about? I mean, you either come and put in or take out money. He said, no, the man is annoyed because the bank do not take his word. That he said, I make this, that my word, when I give my word, is money.
Yeah.
And I came to this bank for you people to lend me money on my word. And you say, I have to bring collateral. He was very annoyed about the collateral. He said, the way I do business, once I say yes and I shake hands, finish.
It's finished.
And you are telling me I have to go and show buildings and things before I get money. So they were trying to explain it to him. He couldn't understand how you need collateral to get money out. He said, my word is all you need.
Yeah, yeah.
Once I give my word, that's it.
They know who you are.
Yeah. He said, we shake hands,
sure.
And that's it. They said, but this is a bank now, you know. It's a people's bank. You cannot give money out on handshake now.
Yeah, well, that's when we become more and more sophisticated.
Yeah.
You know? When we become so sophisticated we forget the individual. Of the individual.
Yeah.
And with the sophistication we lose the integrity of the individual.
The man was convinced that why does he need anything? His word, once he gives his word, finish.
Mm-hmm.
And he shakes hand that it means he will pay the money and nothing will stop him paying the money.
And your activity down there, building those houses you built and having those conditions that you did, should have made you into a very responsible image in the bank. They should have looked upon you and said, yes, yes, we understand, yes, you're wonderful, you're fantastic. But they didn't. They had to have your signature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They said, it's not just handshake. Mm-hmm. You show us what you have, and then we now give you the money backed by what you have. Mm-hmm. He said, no, it's not how business is done.
What do you think the world would think if Bill Gates walked into a department store and said, I'm Bill Gates? Oh, yes, we recognize you, Mr. Bill Gates.
Yeah.
I want this, 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 this. Yeah. And just send the bill.
Yeah.
And do you think they'd send the bill?
They will.
They will.
They will.
They recognize him.
Yeah.
They have confidence in him.
Yeah.
And it's done.
Yeah.
And whether he buys $1 million or $10 million, he's the richest man in the world. And they believe his face is his signature.
Yeah.
His confidence is his signature. And that's really fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's who we are.
That's about what Michael Jackson does. He goes to a shop and he just points at things. And they deliver it. You know, he says, I want that, I want that, I want that, I want that. That's it. They are not wondering whether he has the money or not.
Yes, we are masters.
Mm-hmm.
And we are masters every time we turn around, if we will claim that mastership.
Yep.
And if we don't claim that mastership, as you were suggesting to the bankers that they claim it, with you, then they're the losers. They're the losers, because they should know who they're dealing with. They should know who their clientele are. And when you know who your clientele are, then great things happen. And it's just a marvelous... You've offered a lot of fascinating concepts here. That's great. And for you, they're not fascinating concepts. They're just normal, everyday stuff that you do all the time. And that is really great. That's really great. Well, fantastic. Well, let's take a little pause and be ready for our next thinking together. So there we go.